The National Archives podcast series, launch the British Library Integrated Archives and Manuscripts Catalogue, IANS, presented by Bill Stockton.
When sitting down to prepare this paper, I was struck really by the synergies of today's themes with the work I've been engaged on with others at the British Library over the last, 5 years. We've been engaged on the development of IAMS. This is an integrated cataloguing and access system for the library's, indeed I think fair to say, unique and distinctive archive manuscript collection. This has involved developing a catalogue with an innovative data model to describe the material and related contextual entities, migration of the legacy data, user interface and search development, and integration of metadata with services providing access to digital content, to the stuff itself. In this period, then, we've developed the key functionality, really, of the system, really necessary to meet our vision. So some success today, part of celebration, some belated comms that we need to be doing. As ever, though, of course, we're looking to the future as well. The collections, I think, are a good place to start, even if this audience may not need too much reminding of them. IAMS is the Integrated Archives and Manuscripts System, so it includes both of those traditions within the library. It is now the core catalogue for those collections in the library. So it includes the library's manuscript collections, the Western, Oriental, Literary, Music manuscripts, the Foundation collections, Cotton and Harley, the additional manuscript sequence, and so on. But of course in there are also actually a great many proper archive collections as well, particularly again relating to concerns of the library, literary greats, also family estate collections, some corporate archives relating to publishing, so on. Because recent acquisitions we're proud of, the Harold Pinter Archive and the Ted Hughes Archive, to name two literary ones. There are, of course, the archives of the India Office and its predecessors, beginning with the records of the East India Company, and the related private archives and manuscripts known as the India Office Private Papers. And finally, there are the archive collections that are at risk around the world that are being digitised as part of the Endangered Archives Programme. So this was what we set out to do. This was a mission statement that was already there when I joined the library. To deliver a powerful, flexible, integrated cataloguing and resource discovery system that will unite and broaden access to the British Library's archives and manuscript collections and provide standards-compliant data for external cooperative projects. So, how have we done? Well, our first task then was to develop a single catalogue system to replace the hundreds of spreadsheets, databases, and Word documents holding descriptive metadata for these collections, to support the ongoing cataloguing activity of the collections, and obviously maintain and enhance the descriptive metadata in a standardised manner. So 9 and about 25,000 new catalogue descriptions have been, as it were, entered by hand. Before I joined the library, the decision had been taken to develop the system in-house, using an internally developed architecture designed to showcase particular collections. The architecture does have some advantages. It's a hybrid system, so it provides integrity and control of a database with the future-proofing of actually having the data, the main set of data, actually held as XML. Even so, adapting it to provide the functionality of your average cataloguing system, or certainly average archival cataloguing system, has proved challenging. And it's not something I would recommend to say. I think if we were starting again today, we would look much more closely at the proprietary systems, Calm, we've heard about today, or even such open source systems as ICATOM. There have been some advantages, though, as it were, starting with a blank sheet and being able to design our own system. And that's we're allowed to design our own data model. I think an innovative data model. It's meant we've been able to make the best use of the traditional practices in the library, both archive and manuscript, and ensure that we make the best use of our legacy data, which in some areas was much richer than archival data often is. We didn't want to lose meaning by trying to put it into a restrictive data model. We also had the opportunity, of course, to build on the experience of others and integrate the then latest thinking then in modelling and descriptive standards. When describing the stuff, the archives and manuscripts then represented, we were able to ensure that the system could accurately describe the great variations in language, age, and dating systems found in our very heterogeneous collections. As can be seen on the diagram, though, and in line with the then thinking behind the ICA, the International Council on Archives Framework of Descriptive Standards, and by digression, I would say, of course, our detailed data model is based on ISRG and ISRCPF and the NCA rules, basically. as well as describing the stuff, then, of course, we describe a number of other entities as well, represented by the remaining circles, as well as clearly capture the relationship between these entities. So, for example, we don't simply then index our archives and manuscripts. What we do is we describe the stuff, we describe the person or corporate body or the family, and then we describe the relationship between them. So we can say that, you know, this whole archive was created by a particular person, or a particular thing was in it had this author or this scribe or whatever. So we can deal with production use, as it were, all the way down the hierarchy. In this way, then, we hope to provide the necessary context in order to preserve the evidential value and integrity of the material, as well as ensure, of course, that the user has what they need to interpret it and understand its significance. Having developed the catalogue, then, a great deal of work over the last 2 years has been filling it up with our legacy data. This has just been migration of automated data, not retroconversion. That's still to come. This is now nearing completion, and we've put in about 1.5 million records. I think some people in this audience know I've gained a great deal of experience in migrating data, TNA's catalogue, part of the Access to Archives, A2A programme. It's fair to say that the library's data has been the most challenging I've faced yet. And it's important to note there has been some manual intervention, but only absolutely the minimal necessary in order to get it into the system. The bulk of the data then fell into two main groups. That's the records of the India Office and for the library's Western manuscript collections. Former were relatively straightforward to migrate. Most of the data was in ISAG compliant sort of Excel spreadsheets from A2A projects and other projects. The Western manuscripts data has been, well, a very different story. Although I'm very pleased to announce that the migration was finally completed the week before last. To digress on that a little, the recent effort has in fact been the culmination of work begun over a decade ago, when under the watchful eye of Rachel Stockdale at the British Library, the old published catalogues, familiar to many of you I'm sure, were scanned and converted to Word and presented online as HTML, as a catalogue we call MOLCAT, Manuscripts Online. While the data then was in electronic form and readers were using it and they were finding what they wanted, it was effectively unstructured. Presentation really mimicked the published catalogue. These were made up of descriptions on the one hand and sort of back-of-the-book indexes on the other. Important to realise, though, these indexes weren't as a book index to the descriptions. They actually carried a great deal more detailed data in them themselves. So users searched both bits. They were sort of linked, but they had to search both bits in order to find the complete story. They did it, but confusing, I think. And so we took the unstructured data, and this is what we've now successfully migrated. In brief, then, we took those old descriptions and merged them with the index data. The names and the places in the index data have been then loaded separately as entities, as we saw on the data model. And then we've also loaded the relationships between the now fuller and richer merged descriptions and the name and place entities. So while the process has been as automated as possible, the inconsistency in the original data, some of it dating back to the late 18th century from the original published catalogues, and the need in particular to check and amend the collection hierarchies, which were not explicit in the data at all, has meant that there has been quite a lot of manual work, and the migration has taken, well, years. And I think it's true to say that all those involved are very pleased that this particular project is now over. The results of all this hard work that are now available to the public in our service, Search Our Catalogue, Archives and Manuscripts. This is a separate instance of the proprietary software Primo, used by the library for its global search service. It's very bibliographic in nature, and it's proved difficult to squeeze our very archival data into it. While the search functions very well, in fact, we've not been able to provide users with the traditional tree view yet to allow them to browse the collection context of a particular search result. Although it is possible from a search result to click to see the parents, if there are any, as well as run a search to see the child descriptions, so the files in a series or the items in a file. We're seeing what people will make of this. I don't think it's particularly intuitive. We will see how it goes, I think. We do, though, also, I think, innovatively, following our data model, we allow users to view the descriptions of people and places as well, and then see the links to the material from there. So we are attempting to provide navigation as well as search and find. So it's a usable service, I think, work in progress. We did have some feedback from colleagues here some time ago. It has moved on a little since then. Please take a look. It's an easy URL to remember, searcharchives.bl.uk, and give us feedback. Always welcome. Alongside this catalogue interface, there is also our separate digitised manuscript service, although it's increasingly getting archives in it as well. The important thing here is, A, it is a separate service, but it is now using the metadata that is actually held in IIMS. So this is an open page. Somebody's done a search using the metadata taken from IIMS. They've been taken to a set of thumbnails. The metadata, again from our system, is there providing the context for the material. And then when people actually click on an image, a viewer comes up. And again, some of the metadata from IIMS is there. So we've made significant progress then, I think, achieving our vision. On the business side, bringing the metadata together from these hundreds of separate data sets into one system, and so being able to see really that data set as a whole for the first time, has raised the profile of the metadata in the library, I think, as well as the collections, oddly, to which they relate internally as well. I think this is part of a general recognition in the library, to the extent I just alluded to, of the value of metadata itself as an asset, which is also good news. IIMS is now recognised as one of the three main master metadata repositories in the library in the latest IT strategy. So we have managed to, as it were, get it plugged in to what's happening next. On the collection side, the advantages and flexibility of the ISRG-based data model with rich linking to contextual entities has led to an interest in using IIMS by collection areas really beyond, well, partly beyond the archival manuscript. Photograph, some of it's archival, some of it isn't. Also the philatelic collections as well, some of which are actually, they're definably archival, they're public records, but nonetheless, not perhaps the sort of collections one might necessarily think. So there may be a migration of some of the special collections into the metadata repository. As we've seen, clearly IIMS is the source of metadata for discovery and delivery of the digital content itself, which, as I've said, a great deal of work going on. The archives programme, I've mentioned, digitised manuscripts, I've mentioned the Marilyn marriage and burial records found in the inner office records are now also being digitised about time. And of course, we the library is involved in the Europeana World War I project as well, which involves some archive and manuscript material as well as other collection items. So, finally then, celebration, yes, hooray. We've achieved a lot, I think, in 5 years. But, of course, we're ambitious for the system and, indeed, the collections to which it relates. And there's still, of course, much to do. There's still a little bit of legacy migration, particularly for the Oriental manuscripts, in some ways the hardest nut to crack of all, and that there is yet unrepresented in the system. There's still retroconversion of hard copy catalogues and indexes. There's still quite a lot of that, in fact. Some of it we hope may be done next year as part of a project involving online user participation and gaming. That may involve a number of collections, but may include the Lorne Chamberlain's plays, which are currently uncatalogued, which will be exciting. We need to integrate the system further into the library's infrastructure for the preservation and delivery of digitised content, and indeed provide users with search and discovery of that content in one place, rather than, as I've just said, from two or maybe indeed more places. Finally, we want to open up access to the data in various ways. We've got it all in there now, and I mean, a lot of what Discovery is about, of course, is the opening up of data. And I want now to open up this data.
This event was recorded live on the 21st of March 2012 as part of the Archives Discovery Forum 2012 at the National Archives, Kew. This podcast is copyright to the National Archives. All rights reserved.